We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another week. Mason, first of all, I want to start this week off right. I want to inform you that this is a Jim Carrey slander-free zone. All right? We won't tolerate any anti-Jim Carrey nonsense on this podcast. We are very pro-Jim Carrey.
I have no words.
Good.
I'm not... I'm not super passionate about this take, but I'm fairly passionate about it. And
Hold on. I thought you strongly endorsed. Wait, what was it? I could not endorse this tweet anymore. Was the word? So I feel like you're pretty passionate about it, Mason.
No, I wholeheartedly believe it. But it's one of those things where I understand that I am in the minority, and it's not something, I guess, just general television, individual television comedy is not a topic I feel like is worth me fighting about. Guys I don't like. I mean, guys I do like, or any comics that I do like, I will fight for. But I realize that those that I don't, there are people who disagree with me, and I'm not here to argue, man. I'm not here to argue.
I am. You have time, Mason. But I do, so, you know, this piqued my curiosity a bit. First of all, if you had to pick a favorite Jim Carrey movie, because I'm sure you see tons of them, what would it be?
I've seen maybe, I don't have one. I really don't. And that's not to, that's not me saying Jim Carrey is the worst. That's me saying I haven't seen a Jim Carrey movie in so long because I don't like him, that I really don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, now I feel compelled to ask what yours is.
Liar.
So, liar. Okay. That feels pretty mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course it's Jim Carrey. I'm not going to watch some indie movie of his that, I don't know, watch whatever was funny. And whenever I was growing up, and you know, I laughed at cause he made funny faces.
That's funny because I can't remember what the show is, but I've seen on Hulu, I've seen ads for something he's doing on Hulu, and I don't know what it is, but it looks bad.
So in the same vein, I don't know, maybe this is blasphemy. Maybe I'll get chewed out for this. What are your opinions on Adam Sandler?
I feel like that was a guy who, like, so for me, like, comparatively speaking, like, Will Ferrell is timeless. I feel like I throughout my entire life, I've thought he was hilarious. But as far as Adam Sandler goes, that's much more of a comedian where maybe when I was a teenager, like Big Daddy and Waterboy, ones like that, cool, that they were funny. I was laughing, but now, like, I watch most of those movies now, and I don't know, I don't think they're that funny. So when I was younger, probably liked Adam Sandler a good bit more than I do now.
Yeah, I mean, I think like his early movies were a lot better. I'm trying to think of like his newest movie that I like, and I think it's The Longest Yard.
Yeah, and that's like not even a comedy, really. I mean, so it is a comedy, but like it's not standard Adam Sandler silly humor type of thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but nothing. I mean, I was wondering, since Hanukkah just ended, if you were going to try to tie in Eight Crazy Nights to that, which is just a terrible movie.
No.
But so thank you for not doing that.
I won't do that. I won't do that. Okay, so kind of going back on topic to the Pelicans, who have gone win-loss, I think, since we last recorded. They've flipped the outcome every game, alternated the whole way through, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this stretch.
It's funny because I feel like a lot of the thinking about the trend from last week when we had a similar conversation, the kind of the moral of the story is the same. We talked about defense last week. We talked about how much blame you put on AD. We both agreed not much, and I feel like that's those same storylines persist. But we have a new piece of data, or a new fun thing to talk about since then, and that's the great column you wrote about the Pelicans defense that I know you worked on for a long time, and I want to let you talk a little more about that and let us know what you've seen from the team since writing it. That does it get anything that gives you confidence or makes you more concerned than when you first wrote?
Yeah, so I think for a little bit of background, the gist of the column talks about the Pelicans' defensive coverage, particularly in the pick and roll and in situations where there's screens and handoffs. And what really keyed me into kind of looking into this was Alvin Gentry mentioning it after a game. And I thought it was like kind of a casual mention, but I decided to kind of look into it. And he said, our bigs didn't do a good job of playing up high when covering those screen and rolls. And I didn't know if that was something that they had actively been trying to do, because again, like, that's not something I had seen too much of this season. Pretty much whenever Anthony Davis or Julius Randle and even Mirotić at times were involved in a pick and roll, what they would do is they would have the big kind of drop back in what you may have heard of as in a drop scheme or an ice scheme or a soft scheme. There's a lot of synonyms for this coverage. And they would hope to kind of play two, in which, you know, the big is trying to stop the drive for the ball handler and force them into a mid-range shot, and at the same time is minding the roll man. And it's a difficult proposition for any defender in the league. And, you know, if Anthony Davis last year was really, really good at it, but if you're not Anthony Davis, then it becomes really difficult to do. So when Gentry mentioned that, I didn't know if that was by design, if they were trying to change things, if that's something they wanted to do. And so that kind of got me wondering. You know, I went back and watched some film. I asked a couple people who have access to some great data, and you helped me with that portion as well. And we were able to, you know, find out statistically that the Pelicans indeed were dropping back more in the coverage, more so than they did last year. And it's a quantifiable change, and seems like it's directly impacting the pick and roll defense. And it's, again, it's a tough proposition because I think, you know, the way you decide to cover those actions is really dependent on your personnel, and it's really dependent on your perimeters. Like, you're asking a lot of the bigs when you're asking them to play up high and challenge the ball handler at the point of the screen, make sure they're not pulling up for those threes or driving. And they really need help on the backside, because if they're engaged up high, that means essentially the ball handler is going to have two people defending him, and the roll man might have a free pathway to the lane, and you're counting on both of the defenders up top to kind of take away that passing lane, as well as someone on the weak side to tag that roll man to make sure he's not getting the pass. And that's really hard, because you have to tag that roll man before they get the ball. If they get the ball, you're likely too late, and you're probably going to foul them, or they're going to get an easy look at the rim. And then when you're tagging the roll man, the man you're supposed to be covering is probably in the weak side corner open for a three. So you have to be able to tag that roll man and recover all the way across the court. And again, that's difficult. It helps to be bigger. That's why wings are important. You know, guys who have big wingspans are quick and can cover a lot of ground quickly are super helpful in those schemes. And guys who are Tim Frazier can try really hard. So again, it's a lose-lose proposition, because I think if the Pelicans' perimeter defenders were better, the bigs could play a more conservative drop scheme. But since they're not, the bigs are having to engage the point of attack, and it's causing issues down the line. I do think that the Pelicans have been more successful when engaging up high instead of playing soft, and I think it plays to the strengths of Randall and Mirotić. I don't think there's many situations where they will be great in drop coverage. Those guys are not the most, how do I put it? They're not as long as AD is. Mirotić is not particularly athletic. Randall is still very green in when it comes to guarding the pick and roll. I don't think he understands the nuances of playing two there. And frankly, like, ball handlers are just not afraid to take it at him, and they often get uncontested or lightly contested layups at the rim just because he just doesn't have the physicality to bother the driver. So it's really tough. I do think the Pelicans have done a better job playing high, especially after that Clippers game where everything was just a disaster. And I think they've done a pretty decent job of executing the scheme down the stretch. You know, we want to attribute, we've lost to Memphis and Boston since the last podcast. And I think both games, what's really come to hurt us is kind of the offense, which has been surprising because our offense has been good. But in Memphis, you know, they failed to score in the last nine shot attempts. They were up 192 with, you know, less than 6 minutes left. They were outscored, I think, 15-4 down the stretch. They missed their last nine shots, couldn't execute down the stretch, couldn't get AD good shots, couldn't get good shots for anyone, really. And then against Boston, it was kind of more of the same, but it was throughout the game where if your name wasn't Anthony Davis, if your name wasn't Julius Randle, you just weren't doing anything offensively, and Boston just flat out did not care about you on that end. So I think those things are other separate problems, but I think the defense I'm optimistic about. I think the defense is going to get better, especially when they get more people healthy.
Yeah, and first of all, great summary, and I'm sure there are people who listen to this podcast who maybe don't read our everything that goes up on our site, and so I would imagine everyone was really appreciative of that breakdown. And also, as it relates to the game since then, I generally agree. I mean, it's been the offense that's kind of sputtered more so than the defense. While the defense hasn't been, you know, elite by any stretch, I think last week we talked about it. We said, you know, this can be a league average, maybe slightly above average defense, whatever, when everyone figures things out. And hopefully they can get there. But that said, there were some but there are some issues with playing the Celtics, and part of this is just based on how well coached that team is. But I mean, the fact that, and I was tweeting about it last night after the game. I was looking at the film and all of the shots that the Celtics got at the rim, and the fact that I think people were quick to say, "Oh, AD wasn't playing any defense because he wasn't around the rim," which is silly because the Celtics were doing everything they could to put him in positions where he would not be around the rim because he's such a good defender. And he, and you sent to me this morning that he, the tracking data showed he contested exactly one shot at the rim. And so it's not for a lack of him being there, or not for lack of him trying, it's a lack of him being around the rim, because they put him in this high pick and roll action and forced him onto these guys like Morris, who killed the Pelicans from 3-point range last night. And so he didn't really get to spend a lot of time around the rim. And I think that's maybe more on the coaching staff to figure out a way to get him towards the rim more. But also, like you said, it's hard to do that when you don't have the type of perimeter defenders. Like it was frustrating watching this film, watching Solomon Hill, because there were a few clips where the guy who the Pelicans signed to be this lockdown perimeter defender, and even if he's not going to be your, you know, Robertson type guy, so a guy who can be above average and give you solid defense on the wing for 30 minutes a night is what they signed him for, and he hasn't even been able to do that. I mean, he's looked lost a couple of times, and just pretty frustrating when you really think about it. Drew is the only guy they have on the wing that's even a well above average. Everyone knows that Drew is elite on the defensive end, but there's nothing anywhere close to him on this Pelicans roster, and it just goes back to how much can you ask of both him and Anthony Davis on a nightly basis on both ends of the floor. It's just so, so tough, especially at the pace this team plays at. And now kind of falling back on what we talked about last week, but I mean, yeah, it's just really difficult. And especially when you have a thin rotation like they did against Boston last night, when Nico plays 7 minutes and goes out, he's not playing tomorrow night. And then, you know, you don't have Etuan Moore, who's one of the guys that teams will actually guard on the perimeter in most cases. So just really tough. But at some point, you can't just use injuries as an excuse. You've got to actually go do something. I mean, I hate to point at Denver, but they've dealt with more injuries than the Pelicans have so far. And they've been doing fine. And it's the Pelicans, just they've got to be able to stay afloat in the West. And granted, one game under 500 right now with how packed the West is not going to kill them. And I think that's why you haven't seen any sort of panic move yet. But at some point, they're going to have to make a move. But Anthony Davis said that in his interview with ESPN after the game last night. And so he knows that as well as anyone.
He said that the Pelicans have to make a move, or they have to do something.
That they have to, you know, they have to. He was basically saying we can't use injuries as an excuse.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. But I think you raised an interesting point when you said maybe the coaches can do a better job of putting AD in a position where the coverage lets him contest more shots at the rim. Now, I think that raises an interesting philosophical question. Do you, as a team, have one base scheme that you run night in, night out, and you rely on it, you get really good at it, and you live with the outcomes if you execute it well? Or do you adjust on a night-to-night basis, depending on your matchup and depending on who you're going against and depending on who you have available? I want to get your thoughts first before I share mine.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not going to pretend to know the right answer on this, but I can give you what
one.
I think my thought is that if you get the continuity that you should get from this team, given that the core is essentially the same as last year, you have a couple of new additions in Peyton and Randall, but the rest of the guys have played together for a little while, and not that there's, I mean, to get the kind of cohesiveness that, for example, the Memphis Grizzlies had in the grit and grind era, those guys played together for 4 years. And so I'm not pretending to say that that's what I think the Pelicans should be able to get to. But maybe you have a couple different schemes that you can go to. It's not so malleable that you're changing different, like tweaking things for every little opponent nuance. But maybe you have a couple different things you can go to rather than just saying, we're going to play this one style and play it as best we can every night. Am I hedging too much? Am I kind of using a cop-out answer? Or what do you think?
I don't think you're hedging too much. I don't think it's a cop-out answer. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. You don't have to take a firm side. I think Solomon Hill said a lot of the same. When I was doing research for this article, I was going around asking people around the team their thoughts on the defensive scheme and various things. And one of the questions I asked was this one. I asked it to Solomon Hill. And his response basically was that, you know, I think we would like to have a base defense and we always want to be aggressive. And if those things bite us, you know, we'll adjust. And we do, but we also do want to be mindful of the things that are working for the other team. So if it's a team that it's a good 3-point shooting team, we want to be mindful of that. But he seemed to think that, you know, you have your night in, night out set and, you know, you execute it. And if someone's really, if a team has a particularly dangerous threat, he used Luka Doncic as an example of what he can do off of screens, both, you know, on and off the ball. He said you have to be mindful of that. So I think that's a smart way to approach it, but I don't think that's how every team approaches it. And I think you kind of see it manifest itself in the playoffs where you have some coaches that are excellent regular season coaches and their scheme is great for over the course of a season, over an 82-game season. They're like, we're going to run this scheme where we know it kind of works. We're going to live with the results because, you know, when a sample is big enough, it'll balance out and we'll be happy with it, right? But then they get to the playoffs and they're unable to adjust on a personnel-driven level, and all of a sudden the stuff that's worked for them all year no longer works. And I wonder if we kind of saw that with Portland last year where, you know, they had a super conservative drop defensive scheme. They kind of funneled everything to Nurkic, and then all of a sudden it's the playoffs and none of that's working anymore.
Yeah, and it's almost the inverse for New Orleans, where trying to play one style night in, night out maybe isn't the best, the most effective right now. But when they were able to scheme specifically for Portland in the playoffs last year, it worked like a charm. I mean, they knew exactly what to do, and they had the right personnel to do it. So that's a great point, playoff versus regular season basketball. I mean, how it could benefit certain coaches or certain teams based on the personnel they have to work with and hurt others.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's all fascinating. I think at the end of the day, your personnel is going to dictate a lot of what you do no matter what. So you may have certain ideas, and I think all defenses are kind of geared to prevent the most efficient looks there are, you know, which are looks at the rim, looks at the three. They don't want to foul. They want to generate turnovers. All defenses have that core philosophy, but you're going to do what is best for your roster. Like Houston's going to switch everything because that's what they designed their roster to do. The fact that they aren't good at it this year, well, you know, that's a separate story, but that was their system, and that's what they're going to stick with. And I think if you continue to do that and you get enough repetition and you know this is something you're going to fall back on and everyone has played enough to where they know their rotations, it kind of begins to build a defensive identity, and you kind of need that kind of that continuity as well. So I think there's definitely a benefit to maybe having something more consistent throughout the season, just from that perspective, so that, you know, night in, night out, the guys aren't forgetting that they have to, what they have to do.
Yeah, and I think in that respect, last season's team was, I mean, apart from the devastating Achilles tear for Boogie, it feels like, and maybe this is just recency bias, but it feels like the rotation guys, at least once Nico got to the Pelicans, the rotations were pretty consistent, and that they had pretty fortunate luck as it came from an injury perspective, and they had the same guys playing. Solomon Hill was kind of eased back in towards the end of the season from his hamstring tear, but apart from that, they had the same guys kind of relying on each other, and again, maybe this is just me thinking of that time fondly because of how much rotation disarray this team's had this year, but yeah, it just becomes tougher when you've got different starting five every night and different guys in and out of the lineup to get that know, to get your communication down and make sure you're on the same page with everyone. And especially, I think we both came to realize this today, especially when you don't have any time to practice, which is something the Pelicans have dealt with over the last month plus. I mean, they lead the NBA in games played, and they haven't had more than a day off between games in weeks. And
no, since they, November 10th. So today is December 11th.
Yep, so a month.
So yeah, and, it's been a whole month, and they haven't had more than a day off. And Drew leads the NBA in minutes played and possessions played. AD and Drew lead the NBA collectively in minutes played per game. I mean, it's a lot that the Pelicans are going through right now, just from a workload perspective.
Yeah, yeah, and so you couple the tiring workload with the fact that these guys haven't had any time to have a damn practice in between games in a full month. I mean, tough. It's tough, and it's not an excuse for the inconsistency, but it plays into it. And I think it'll be. I am very much looking forward to this team having. I think there's a stretch. I saw they play Sunday, and between those two, that the games on either side of that, there's like they have pretty much a week off. Maybe it's like Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, and so that's very much a welcome break. And I realize guys like Nico might take that time just to get his ankle healthy, but hopefully they can get a practice or two, and even if it's at half speed, and maybe if they want to tweak some things or make sure guys are really gelling in the way they want on the defensive end.
Shoot, even just like spending some time at home, chilling with family, you know, just. Take a mental reset as well.
That's not the Jim Boylan way, man. I don't know about that.
Oh, dude, man. Jim Boylan has the Sacramento Kings clowning on him, so I don't know how long his way is going to last.
I've got a couple, obviously being in Chicago, I've got a couple of Bulls fans in the office, suffering Bulls fans, and they're not – I mean, they know that kind of the management of the team is a clown show, but – man, it's almost at a breaking point for this team. It's a good thing they've got guys like Markkanen and Wendell Carter, because otherwise,
and Robin Lopez,
of course, Robin Lopez. But otherwise, some of their fans would be at wit's end. Like that the piece that came out today on SB Nation by Ricky, just evisceration.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a total mess. I think we're fortunate not to have that, which kind of makes me laugh because there's kind of this buzz that Chicago is going to make a big play for Davis, you know, should he become available. And that makes me laugh because for him to go play for that organization, that'd be – talk about a nightmare.
It's funny because that's – you say that there's been buzz, and I feel like outside of the fact that he's from Chicago – I haven't heard anything about them, and isn't that kind of like ridiculous because of how big of a market Chicago is? Like it's New York, it's the Bay, it's Chicago or LA and Chicago, like those, and I guess Boston. Lump the Celtics in there just for history's sake.
Miami's always a destination.
Yeah, but Chicago's. I mean, the Michael Jordan Bulls, like they should be right there, and even the Knicks have a better shot at landing a big time player than they do right now, and the Knicks have been arguably just as much of a joke, if not more, over the last decade or so. So, it's not to digress and talk too much about the Bulls, but yeah, what a mess. And
this
I think
is now as Pelicans a Bulls podcast. Welcome to In the Bulls.
I think you could have done better with that one, but we have to approach this entire podcast with a monotone voice if we record about the Bulls. But yeah, Pelicans fans, it could always be worse, right?
So I have a question for you.
Yep.
I want to drive the conversation back to personnel and how personnel works. Now, I think since our last podcast, Randall has become a full-time starter. How do you feel about that change? Do you feel it's successful? Do you see it? Do you think this is what we should stick with going forward? What are your thoughts?
So it's a difficult question to answer without some more context. Like, I think it depends on who you think is the right guy for this team past this season, I guess, because Nico obviously has struggled over the last few games, even especially coming off the bench, but now we know why. I mean, this guy's had his ankle's been bothering him since he came back from that injury, and he's clearly not been himself. And so I want to reserve judgment until Nico becomes Nico again. And so I'm fully on board with bringing back the original starting five from the team that was blitzing opponents over the first four games. So assuming you get Nico and Elfrid Payton back around the same time, I'm a advocate for putting Julius Randle back on the bench, because I think you can still mix and match the three bigs, and you can still, and I think Julius Randle is a better anchor for the defense. For the second unit. I think he's a better anchor for that second unit than Nico is, because he's better at creating his own shot. He's good at when the shot clock breaks down, trying to get something out of nowhere. That said, I've enjoyed watching him with the starting lineup. I think he gives some away on the defensive end. Obviously, he's had both mental breakdowns and just kind of being late ball watching. I mean, I saw it in the film. I was watching from the Celtics game last night. Just kind of, on a pick and roll, just kind of losing the screener, or losing the one guy switches, he doesn't, that sort of thing. But I think the nice thing about having Nico, Randle, and AD is that you can play AD with both those guys and have success. It's the success is a different kind of success, and I think we need a bigger sample size to see who truly fits better for the sake of the entire offense or entire team. I know that Randle kind of overlaps a little more with AD as far as what those two want to do offensively, but I think on a broader scale, I want to see a little more with each of those guys with AD before I feel like I can give a more informed answer later on in the season. But what do you have a? I feel like you have more of a concrete opinion about who the better fit is, or what Randle's fit with AD is.
I don't know. It's tough for me because I think the Pelicans are doing something very unique with all three bigs, and I think there's a pathway to be successful regardless of who you put next to AD, but I think that pathway very much dictates what you do next. So I think that my personal opinion before going into the season was Randle might be an awkward fit next to AD, and I don't think I've seen enough to take away those feelings. So while the numbers from a net rating standpoint say that Randle and AD, that pairing is successful, they're outscoring opponents, I still think that AD is being a little bit more marginalized in those lineups. And I think some of the numbers I tweeted out today point towards that. When you look at when AD shares the floor with Nico versus when he shares the floor with Randle, when he's with Nico, he's getting more looks at the rim. He's more efficient. He's taking less mid-range shots. He's getting more fast break points, where when he's with Randle, all those numbers drastically change to where I feel like he sacrifices more to make space for Randle than the other way around, just because he's more capable of doing so and he draws more attention. So Randle definitely is feasting off of the attention AD draws, and how AD's kind of pulling away defenders by making room for him. And going forward, I don't know if it's worth your superstar marginalizing himself to make room for another player. But if it works from if you're beating opponents that way, if it works from a basketball perspective, then why not? If you're truly an unselfish basketball player, it shouldn't matter to you about getting those numbers as long as you're winning, right? So right. I think it's an interesting, again, it's one of those philosophical questions where I don't think there's a right answer. But here's what I do think. I think if you choose to go with Randle long-term, let's say you're locked into the AD and Randle front court, I think it becomes difficult to incorporate another star-level player than, let's say if you went with Mirotić. Mm-hmm. I think Miritich fits in with another maybe high usage or someone that needs the ball more type player, because Miritich can still be effective without the ball, just by virtue of being there. And and so I think it kind of dictates. I think there's a pathway where if you went with Randle, you can load up on low usage, good shooters, strong defenders, glue guys, and that would be your team, and you know, that's what you're rolling with. But I do think it makes it more difficult when you have Drew, Randle, and Davis to add another person, another personality who's going to need the ball, who's going to, you know, want to score 20 plus points per night or whatever that may be. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the many tough decisions Demps is going to have to make, is that, you know, if there's a trade for a star that they can make, a guy that can be the number two or number three guy, probably hopefully number two guy on the offensive end, most nights behind AD, that can take a little pressure off of Drew on the offensive end and let him be his best version of himself, particularly on the defensive side, but also on offense, then that's one thing. But also, if you can't find that guy, thought exercise would be, all right, let's say what is probably the most likely scenario here, and they can only keep one of the two moving to next season. Forget what AD is going to do. Assume we're in kind of the same position where hopefully he'll sign the Supermax. We don't know. But you can only sign, based on the other moves you made to bring in a better player on the wing, you can only sign Nico or Randle. And then you bring in a guy like Dedmon or someone. I know we were talking about Dedmon right before this podcast. Some of the other Bourbon Street Shots guys is a guy who, you know, isn't going to demand the ball much or nearly at all. He's a good rim protector. He can shoot a three. Kind of a perfect rotation big.
Super Diallo.
Yeah, sure. And so if he's there and you don't really have another big, you can't fill out the front court rotation with both Randle and Nico, and you have to choose one. I don't know, and I realize you probably need a little more context for this answer, but it's I think that's the kind of scenario that the Pelicans will have to face moving forward, because they're not going to be able to, this kind of Nico, Randle, AD trio is probably going to be short-lived.
I mean, I think I've been on the train that we need a rim protector for the longest time, even going back to when, you know, we had Boogie, even when we had Ashik. I've always wanted a player next to AD who is an athletic role man, who can catch a lob, who can get above the rim, who can set screens and rebounds. You know, like what Tyson Chandler is doing to the Lakers, or what JaVale McGee was, but someone maybe a little better. Dedmon fits the role perfectly. And even if the Pelicans chose to go with both the bigs that they have currently, Randle and Miritich, I still want someone like that that's going to give me 15 minutes a night, because you need to give AD a break. You need to give those other guys a break, and you need just another rim protector, just another rebounder, someone who's not worried about their numbers offensively, someone who's just going to set the screens and box out and do the dirty work that the Pelicans, I think, just currently lack. So I don't care which big you choose to go with. I want that person on the team no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. That I said Greg Steensman, by the way.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay.
Just bring back Hilton
Armstrong, why don't you?
Yeah, I mean that makes sense, and the reality of it is you need to know what the rest of the team's going to look like before you can ultimately make that call. However, the Dems probably only has until the trade deadline to really make that decision, because do you think that both Randle and Nico are on, what percent chance would you give Nico and Randle both being on the Pelicans after the trade deadline?
After the trade deadline?
Yep.
55.
Interesting. So you really have no clue.
Okay, you know what? I'm not going to hedge my bets. I'm going to say like 75% chance that they're both on the team.
Okay. That's Huh.
I think if they could, they would package like Etuan and Solo and a pick and Wes and all those guys, you know, that group of players into whatever they're going to get rather than moving a big. Unless I think they only move one of the bigs if they're getting similar talent in return, or like an all-star or quasi-all-star back. That's what I think.
And that makes sense, because that quasi-all-star is probably taking up so much of your cap space that you're not going to be able to afford Randle anyway, because right. You can't really you can't use bird rights to bring him back or anything. So yeah, the reality of that statement though is that you don't think the Pelicans are going to be able to trade for a star.
It's difficult. I mean, I don't think they're not going to be able to. I just want to be realistic about it, that it's difficult.
Yep. It's they're called stars for a reason. So it's going to be tough. We've seen Dell often pull off miracles around the edges, or not miracles, but pull off shrewd moves around the edges. And the trade last year for Nico, I don't think anyone looks back on that deal negatively. I think everyone considers that a win.
Except for the Bulls. Go Bulls.
Yeah, Chandler Hutchinson's really, really doing things over there. But but yeah, so we'll see. I think the only thing we can be fairly certain about is that pick's gone again. And we'll just have to wait and see where it's going and for who, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any more questions for you, Mason. I think we're good for tonight.
All right, well, yeah, I think we can wrap up. So before we go, I want to, you know, since we mentioned last week that we're now joined on this onto this Blue Wire network, and wanted to shout out a friend of mine who was close. We watched a bunch of games together back when he lived in Chicago, Carter Rodriguez. Now he's back in Ohio, and his insufferable podcast partner, Justin Rowan, as far as his Twitter personality goes. Just kidding, Justin. The Chase Down Pod, they do really, really good stuff on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And obviously there's a certain player who's not there anymore, but it's still the Kevin Love extension to all the players that are getting rumored to be traded. They've already moved George Hill to get Dellavedova back. There's another guy by the name of J.R. Smith, former New Orleans Hornet, who may be going somewhere too, but there's a lot that could impact the entire league going on in Cleveland right now, and those guys are all on top of it. And so I just wanted to give them a quick shout out to make sure to go check out their Blue Wire pods. Everyone's doing great stuff. The network's growing every week. It's really cool to be a part of this small but this new venture that's growing exponentially almost. So
yes, please check out our little family in the Blue Wire group, please.
Yep. That's all I got. I also, since we're shouting out, and speaking of the whole trade for a star thing, I think Jason's piece on Bourbon Street Shots from this week is also fantastic. I think you and I align with it very much. Talks about how the goal of keeping AD is winning without AD, and it's a really well thought out piece. Talks about how they're looking to land a star. That's the move. If they can't do it, it's not to say that AD won't resign, but that's where their focus is, and I think rightfully so. So we'll see if it pans out, but definitely go check it out.
Alrighty, thanks for listening, guys.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.